Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
One of the best MVPs and one ex-MVP. Mark and Rob together offer over 40 years Microsoft experience. Robert Crane. He's an Office Servers and Services MVP, the Director of CIA Ops for over 20 years, and a very sought-after presenter. Visit CIAOps.com. Mark Keane. He's an Azure TSP working at Microsoft, building constructive tension, the productive force that makes customers want to use Microsoft Azure. All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, Skykick, and more with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Get started now with Azure with the Ingram Micro Easy Azure program at www.ingrammicrocloud.com.au/Microsoft-Azure. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome back to another Need to Know podcast. I'm joined, as always, by Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
Not too bad. What's been happening in Mark's world?
In Mark's world, lots of stuff at Microsoft. Been busy as always and doing a whole bunch of things, leading the life of a TSP. Been flat out massively busy. So what about yourself?
Well, not too busy. Always something to do. Been out and about doing Azure training and presentations. We've got some Microsoft 365 coming up before the end of the year, so still very busy until the new year, and then it kicks off again very shortly afterwards. What about yourself? Do you actually get a break at Microsoft?
Yeah, that's right, because it's coming into Christmas, isn't it? But yes, we get a break. But not only that, we are believers of a place not to go to work. It's a place to do work. And because of that, we can pretty much work from wherever. So I'm taking a bit of time off over Christmas. I'll be putting official leave in, but I'll be going up a few days early. A lot of other people on the team are taking time off and they're going overseas. I've got overseas holidays booked, but not only that, there's other customers which are all also heading off and going on leave. And so the whole industry goes pretty much quiet for that whole period, as you know, Rob. And coming into January as well, for the first couple of weeks, it's fairly quiet. So it'll be good because half of it will be leave and the other half will be catching up on a whole bunch of stuff like induction material, which I haven't had time to complete yet, training videos and demos and a whole bunch of things.
Well, that's good. And you're going away, are you? How long are you going away for?
For roughly 8 days, I think. Taking the family up to Queensland and back. So the flights, don't ask how much they cost with two kids. But anyway, that's just it. That's the life of running a family is you gotta do what you gotta do.
Unfortunately, they don't seem to fit in overhead luggage anymore, do they?
I love it. That'd be cool. You can just imagine jumping on the plane and then you'd be like picking up. You know what? I'm going to try that. My son would love that. Honestly, he would honestly love jumping up there and hopping in that little compartment. That'd be awesome. Kids would love it.
Oh, well, as long as he's got his wheels to the back, he'll be fine.
I should get somebody to video it, and then like some air hostess will come down and say, "Hey, what are you doing? That'd be hilarious.
Oh, well, I look forward to seeing the news article on the internet very shortly.
Okay, cool. I'll stage it. I'll get a photo of it for you. How's that sound?
Excellent. All right. Make sure you tweet it out so that everybody can share it and
awesome.
See what it's like.
And I'll get the air hostess to be an actor, say, "Oi, what are you doing?" and get a really bad look on her face. Perfect.
You mean they don't say that already when you get on a plane? No?
Yeah, funny.
All right. So what's been happening in Azure?
Okay. Lots of stuff has been happening in Azure, Rob. As you know, Azure just doesn't sleep. Azure goes on and on and on and on. Literally, it just keeps running 24/7.
Sounds like somebody I know.
Exactly. Okay. With VMware, have you heard of VMware before?
Yes.
Okay, good. I should hope so, because lots of people use VMware. And guess what? It's coming to Azure. Yeah, that's right. So most workloads can be migrated to Azure easily using services like Azure Site Recovery. However, there may be specific VMware workloads that are unique and more challenging to migrate to the cloud. For these workloads, you may need to the option to run the VMware stack on Azure and as an intermediate step. Microsoft have announced the preview of VMware virtualization on Azure, a bare metal solution that runs a full VMware stack on Azure hardware, co-located with other Azure services. So we are delivering this offering in partnership with premier VMware certified partners, and the general availability of this product is expected in the coming year. So open for preview at the moment, and I hear limited spaces in the US at this point. But that's good news, because we've got some customers at the moment which are running VMware and very sensitive applications, which having this for them at the other end in Azure is a welcome change, because I can just simply move their VMDK file up to the cloud. Cool, huh?
Certainly is. VMware is a very popular, obviously, virtualization platform, and obviously Microsoft's competing against it with its Hyper-V, so letting it run in Azure will hopefully bring more people into the Azure fold and the Microsoft fold, so that'll be interesting to see when that does become available.
Now, there was an article floating around, and I won't go into details, but it sort of talked sort of the opposite in relation to that, but we'll get to the bottom of it as to why. But anyway, moving on, ANZ. Who do you bank with, Rob? Which bank?
Lots of them.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm not an ANZ customer. However, you should know what ANZ are. They are one of the big four banks. They have deployed Azure Stack. So ANZ, the first Australian customer for Azure Stack, using the system to avoid having to move masses of data for a new application into the public cloud. That makes sense in that sentence. Masses of data that I want to move to the cloud, and plus it's a new application, which they've built on-prem. They've just spent the money for it, and they've got to let it ride off over 3 years. That so makes sense. Anyway, good use case. And thanks, ANZ, for getting the ball rolling. They have used Azure Stack. They're putting it in front of their data using web apps, Kubernetes, and modern cloud paradigms in front of the back-end systems that contain all the data. Because of the consistency from a DevOps perspective between Azure and Azure Stack, ANZ can deploy the same app in countries where the local laws prohibit data from leaving the geography, and across both Azure and Azure Stack together. So Azure Stack is gaining traction because of the large community of developers familiar with public cloud services such as Azure, compared to bespoke Snowflake cloud services. When Microsoft started doing the research for Azure Stack, developers do not like Snowflake clouds, which is understandable, Rob, because like imagine if you're a developer, right, and you've got to learn a certain language or certain way of doing things. You get into a habit, and all of a sudden, you've got to change to something else. But the fact that you've got Azure and Azure Stack now, and you learn one thing, and that's it, doesn't that make life so much easier and less stressful?
Certainly would, but again, I think times will change. I think things change as much as developers, if not more, as IT pros. But again, anything that means less time to market, I suppose, is a better thing.
Well, everyone would love a job where you can just like not always have to upskill all the time, because it is time consuming, and it's frustrating when you don't know how to do something, right? And you've got to really sort of stay on top of it. And the more you do something, the more it turns into like a habit as such. All right. Azure Automation. What do you know about that, Rob?
That automates Azure?
Sort of. Another guess?
It's Azure Automation. What Correct. Else? Lots of PowerShell, I suppose.
Correct. So Azure Automation is a service that runs on PaaS, Platform as a Service, and it's like a PowerShell engine. It's a glorified scheduled task engine in the cloud that you can add all your PowerShell scripts to, like called runbooks, and they kick off based on times and events can kick them off, and web hooks, and they can fire off up in the cloud across your Azure VM workloads, or they can fire off on-prem in what's called hybrid workers. Now, what is new is the fact that now they've come out with this new Azure Automation Watcher Tasks. That's pretty cool. So basically what happens is there's two parts. There's now, you have the ability to author a Watcher runbook. It polls a system in your environment, and then it calls an action runbook to process any events found. And this is all in the spirit of the hybrid worker. So in the cloud, Rob, up in Azure, we've got this thing called Event Grid and so forth, where if something happens, you can poll for an event, or if an event happens, it kicks off something else, like it fires off like a function or whatever else, or a logic app. But on-prem, it was a bit sort of difficult to do that. And so this is where Azure Automation comes in with a hybrid worker. Now this Watcher runbook will poll a system. As soon as something happens, it'll call an action. So same sort of thing, right? It's a bit like a logic app in a way for on-prem, controlled from the cloud. So as an example, use cases, you can look for new files that arrive in a folder and take action based on the content of the files. You can monitor for new requests in SharePoint and fulfill the request using an action runbook. You could also watch for a new email in Office 365 in a folder there, and you can escalate to a ticketing system, or you could watch for alerts generated in a monitoring system and perform remediation tasks based on the alert type. Interesting. So more info of that in my blog and in the show notes. Rob, I'll hand over to you. However, before I get you, because I do have some more news items to go to run through. However, before I let you kick off with your news items, I didn't get to ask how you were, or how you've been lately since the last podcast. What have you been up to?
I've been, don't worry, I've been to many places, doing lots of Azure and spinning up Microsoft 365 stuff, so that kept me busy.
We did go into that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. You're obviously, again, a little bit preoccupied this morning. He always gets like this, ladies and gentlemen, when there's a podcast. He's so excited that he just forgets a lot of things. So why don't I talk about some Office 365 and let him regain his composure?
Go for it. We love Office 365. Right. Everybody
uses it. I've heard that. One of the things that Office 365 now is allowing us to do is to get access to the business apps in our enterprise subscription. So basically what we can do is go into the Microsoft Office 365 store, and you can sign up for the free business apps. So you buy them for $0, add them to your tenant, and this will give you the ability to do things like bookings. Bookings was only currently available with the business premium SKU, but now you can add it to your enterprise licenses thanks to this purchase. Now the idea is the business apps, as they call it, will also include things like MyLIQ, invoicing, and those sort of things when they become available in your country. So in the moment, in Australia, Bookings is the only one that is available, so we can get that. The others hopefully will roll out very shortly. But now we can add it to our enterprise subscription, which is going to make a lot of people very happy, because the enterprise SKUs have a lot of great things that even small businesses use, and it's good that now they can add the business apps as well, which are also very handy. Microsoft has also added new reports for Teams. So if you go into your admin portal, go into the reports area, you'll find there are new reports there based on Microsoft Teams. So this is going to help people get an idea of the adoption of Teams throughout their organization, and it will also give you some metrics to check on the growth of Teams. So you get a better idea of how well it's being adopted in an organization by looking at these reports. And again, that's going to give people, and I suppose administrators, much better insight into how Teams is being used and the growth within the industry. One of the other things they've added for Teams is also access via PowerShell. So again, a limited subset of features and functions can be done with this new PowerShell module for Teams. We expect to see that obviously grow and improve over time. So you'll be able to do more work with Teams deployment, setting up channels, those sort of things, using new PowerShell module. So adding lots and lots of PowerShell modules, obviously very important.
Sorry, what was that? Say that word again.
PowerShell.
and again?
Oh, dear. Here we go. See, it doesn't take much to distract him, does it? One of the other things that Microsoft has been doing is bringing, allowing you to bring your own customer key, your own encryption key into Office 365. So there's an FAQ here that shows you how to set it up and basically what's involved. So I'll put that in there. So those of the Tin Foil Hat Brigade who really want to protect their data so that no one else can see it can actually bring their own key into Office 365 and into Azure as well. But again, with great power comes great responsibility. So make sure that you understand the ramifications of bringing your own encryption key into Office 365. It does protect your data, but you are then responsible for that key and making sure that it is accessible. Some new stuff around SharePoint mobile notifications. So when we create news articles now in our team sites and they bubble up into the overall SharePoint summary page, we're also going to get those in our SharePoint mobile app, and that will then give us notifications, push notifications of what's going on, which is quite handy when you start using the news features in there. Lots of other things coming, but what about more stuff on Azure from you, Mark?
Good old Azure again. Hey, thanks for the Office 365 news, by the way, Rob.
I'm glad that I could be of assistance. I play such a minor role on this podcast now. I'm just grateful to be on.
Together, thanks to Rode Microphones and Ingram Micro Cloud, we cover the whole breadth of the Microsoft Cloud.
Oh, we sort of do. But there's so much, so I don't think that we could get a breadth across it. But anyway, we do our best.
We do. Okay, Azure Advisor, your personalized best practices service just got better. So, Azure Advisor, personalized cloud service for your Azure best practices that help you improve reliability or availability, enhance protection, optimize performance of your Azure resources, and maximize the return on your IT budget. That's right, maximizing the return on your IT budget. We're telling you how you can save money and add more value, which is really good. Advisor brings an all-new dashboard to help you more easily review the overall status of your recommendations across multiple subscriptions in four categories: high availability, security, performance, and cost. You can see the overall status of active recommendations, their impact, and the number of resources that can be optimized. The cost recommendation category also highlights the total possible savings you can achieve if you want to implement all recommendations in this category. In addition, the new downloadable reports in PDF and CSV formats allow you to share advisor recommendations within your organization to prioritize and collaborate. Have you used that before, Rob, Azure Advisor?
I certainly illustrate it and let people know and go into it when I do training and presentations. So, yes, I do show people. Not much chop for me because, again, I seem to be able to manage my costs pretty well. But, yes, very, very handy service and, again, gives you that bubble up feature. You can look at it per virtual machine or per service, but also bubble it right up at the top. So, yes, it's a great service to obviously make sure that you're getting the optimal performance and costing from your Azure environment.
Exactly. That's right. So it's all about giving you value. Oh, and speaking of cost value, there's another word called free, Azure Virtual Data Center. There is a free ebook that's been published online in relation to this. So it says here, Azure Virtual Data Center, this ebook is an approach to making the most of the Azure Cloud Platform's capabilities while respecting your existing security and networking policies. When deploying enterprise workloads to the cloud, IT organizations and business units must balance governance with developer agility. Governance, Rob, is across Azure locking, resources, resource groups, role-based access control, policy, all sorts of things. That's what it covers. The free ebook, Azure Virtual Data Center, provides models to achieve this balance from governance to agility with emphasis on governance. There you go. So there's a hot topic at the moment, Rob, with a lot of people who are moving to the cloud, especially big companies that want to focus on the governance, because if you imagine this, you've got your public cloud, which you had, well, previously on-prem, and then everyone moves, it's all of a sudden there's different teams that spin up machines all over the place, and there's not really any way to manage or govern that whole usage of the public cloud. It's like shadow IT gone mad, or shadow IT on steroids. It amplifies that whole fact of shadow IT in the public cloud. So having something to control all that and keeping abreast of it is a hot topic at the moment.
So speaking of cost, I'm sure that you have mentioned this before, but Azure cost management obviously is another little area, and that comes with the CloudDyne service that Microsoft purchased recently.
CloudDyne.
So you can sign up for the trial there. I believe that it's going to be free for IT pros and people over watching Azure costs. So that's another great little service that will give you deeper insight into the costings when it comes to Azure.
Free for Azure customers until May next year, which we don't have pricing after that. So it is free for the next 6 months or so. However, it's not free for AWS and Google Cloud customers. It's 1% of the cloud spend is how much it is. But it does bring all the public clouds into one. You can add them all together as a cloud account, so you can report across pretty much everything. You can add different business units, give them access to it, uses role-based access control. You can set up these entities. So for example, a subscription for, say, the developer team. You can have another subscription or falls under another department for the project team, for example. And you can add other users and give them access to different levels in the entity. It's like you build like a hierarchy, like a tree that represents your organization, and it matches up with your subscriptions across all your public clouds. It also, too, Rob, has a pretty cool report in there called the Cost Sizing Recommendations Report, which goes throughout your VMs and comes back with a report as to which VMs are underutilized. And so it looks at both the average CPU performance and average memory performance across all of your entire VM workloads. And so within like seconds of clicking on this little report, you can see which ones are being underutilized, and it actually has recommendations for sizing. And so imagine if you had like over 300 virtual machines, which one certain customer did or does, you can then go through and show them the value of this tool as a way of saving money. And so here you go, you can go from this virtual machine size to this virtual machine size. You expand it out and you can see the reasons why. You can see that, oh, look at this, these virtual machines are only using roughly 33% of memory across pretty much the whole entire day. And so they're not using the whole entire resources that are available in the current SKU for the VM. So that's another good use case for it. And especially too, Rob, have you heard of this new reserved instances? People can lock in their VMs for 1 or 3 years.
Yep. So that's even on the pricing calculator. So yes, reserved instances, otherwise save lots and lots of money.
So yeah, save up to, in quotes, up to 72% is what they're saying. It does change across regions and across virtual machine SKUs and families, but yeah, so if you want to lock in your VMs for a period of a year or 3 years, if you do it for 3 years, you save a bit more money. 1 year, you save some. 3 years, you save more. Then you can lock them in. But before locking them in, you might want to sort of check this CloudDyne tool first and run it across your environment to make sure you've got the sizing set up correctly. It's called right sizing. And so right size your VMs to the correct size based on what workloads are running on them. And then once you're happy it's all good, then lock them in and save
them
money.
They've also got low priority VMs as well.
Low priority ones for
doing batch processing.
Oh, yeah. That's the that's for Azure Batch, isn't it?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, last news item. So building a modern campus. So at the time when space is at a premium and many companies are looking for room to grow, Microsoft recognizes that their 500-acre campus in Redmond, Washington is a unique asset. Neighboring a vibrant urban core, suburban towns, lakes, mountains, and miles of forest, it's one of Microsoft's crown jewels. And as Microsoft continues to grow and look to create the best workplace in the tech sector, Microsoft is going to invest right there in Redmond, home for more than 30 years. So next fall, they're going to break ground. So that's next summer for us. They're going to break ground on a multi-year campus refresh project that'll include 18 new buildings, 6.7 million square feet of renovated workspace, and 150 million in transportation infrastructure improvements, public spaces, sports fields, and a green space. Also, underground car parks as well. So there's a link in my blog and on the show notes. So I don't know if you've seen the video, Rob, but that is pretty impressive what they're doing for that.
It's also going to include light rail, I believe. And again, that's going to complement the existing shuttles. And
yep.
Brad Anderson will be able to do his next series of interviews from a little train, probably. So again, maybe that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Just for Brad. Brad's paying it out of his own back pocket.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, if you have a look at the video, they're building up as well a little bit. So I think they've got approval from the local council to build up, because that's the reason why they built out before, because there was some sort of limitation with the height of the building restrictions. So now they're going up a little bit higher. And some of the buildings you look at actually reminds me of the University of New South Wales. It's the way this, the structure they set them up. And it's quite open. It's very much like a campus, sort of a university campus in a way.
Good. Well, obviously they must be doing well. Their business must be growing.
Business is booming.
The way it's going is going to obviously take a while, and it'll be a little bit disruptive, obviously, but in the long run, it'll make a home for more programmers and developers, which is a good thing as Microsoft continues to grow. So we're all done with your news?
We are. It's all done for Azure at this point.
All right. So why don't we pick a topic randomly out of the air, something like, maybe directory services?
Starts with D.
Let's have a talk about it.
Domain services?
Domain services, yeah. Let's talk about domain services. Domain services. What can you tell us about domain services?
All right. What do you want to know about domain services? All right. Domain services is like your Active Directory on-prem. However, it's set up as a service because it's managed in Azure. And so what does that mean? Well, let me just sort of detangle all that and diffuse that whole thing. So basically, when you set up Active Directory on-prem, you've got to set up, like, if you want to do it properly, you'd have to set up minimum 2 servers for high availability. You'd have to spread your FSMO roles across certain servers, either the 5 FSMO roles. You'd have to go through the motions of like working out where the AD database is going to sit, what drives are going to back it up. You got to make sure that all runs. And then you've got to like protect the keys to the kingdom. So the enterprise admin and the domain admin and stuff like that. You've got to make sure the servers are secure in an environment. And all that sort of stuff, right? So it's doable. It's fairly straightforward. It's pretty easy to do. But, you know, like it's this world of people moving to the cloud. They just probably don't want that whole burden of managing like the whole entire stack. And so this is where Azure AD Domain Services comes in. Now, and the other thing here too is this thing called group policy. And so you've probably heard this before, that group policy is now available as part of domain services. That is true, and let me just explain that how it works. Now, you know on-prem how you open up the Group Policy Management console and you get to see the MMC console and group policy. You got the computer policies and user policies. You can add new policies. You can edit them and add in scripts and so forth. Well, that is exactly the same in domain services. And how it works is this. You simply set up a VNet in Azure, so a virtual network, and you then go through the motions of, in the marketplace, new directory services. You configure a few things, the name of the AD. So, for example, you know, like you'd say something like .local or whatever. So, domain.local, for example, or whatever you want to call it on-prem. Same sort of thing, right? So, it's exactly the same. You do it for directory services. Give yourself an internal, fully qualified domain name for your domain. You go through and then you need to tie it to an Azure AD directory, so like an onmicrosoft.com sort of directory if you've got one already set up. You also need to tie it to a VNet. And the way this all works is this. So it takes about half an hour to set up. So once you hit go, it spins up a couple of VMs in the back end. So it takes about half an hour roughly to get set up. And the couple of VMs it spins up are the two domain controllers which are managed. Now, they're running in some sort of environment in Azure. You don't have access to those VMs, and they're the actual domain controllers. Now, the finished product is where you then go to your VNet. You get given 2 DNS servers as part of your managed domain, like normal, two DNS servers on-prem, same thing, and you then configure your VNet to say, all right, VNet, give out primary DNS, this domain, DNS server, and secondary DNS, this domain, DNS server, for example. Because as you know, everything in Azure is DHCP, then you restart your VMs in Azure, in the VNet, it picks up a new, like an IP address from DHCP along with the DNS addresses. And at that point, DNS is pointing to, on the VMs, pointing to your domain services, domain controllers, as normal, just like on-prem. And then you just go through the motions as normal. So go log into your VMs in Azure, right-click on the properties, go to the system, computer name, add to domain, and type in the name of the domain that you created, and type in your username and password. Now, at this point, the username and password that you type in when you add in the computer to the domain is not your local username and password. It's your Azure AD. Remember how I said before, when you're setting up directory services, you have to tie it to a couple of things, the VNet plus a Azure AD directory? Well, that's why, because you need to you need some sort of authentication, and that's where that ties in. And so you type in your username and password for Azure AD. So if it's a company you've got set up in there, that's fine, a company domain name, and then you just type that in and add your computer to the domain. It says welcome to the whatever domain, it restarts, and then that's it. Now, to get users to use it, it's quite easy because it uses some sort of like a password type of sync. And so all you do is any users in your Azure AD that you would like to log on to any computers in the VNet, like for example a terminal server environment, if you wanted to set that up, then it's a simple case of asking the users to reset their password in Azure AD, because at that point, once the password gets reset, it triggers a replication of that password to the domain services managed Active Directory. And then give it another 15 minutes, and then the users can happily sign in with their Azure AD credentials to machines that are on a managed domain, and then you can knock yourself out and set up group policy. And if you wanted to as well, you can open up Active Directory users and computers on one of your computers up there and have a look at the way it's set up. And if you go in there in Active Directory users and computers and navigate through your domain as you would normally, you can click on the domain controller's container and see the two domain controllers there that are set up, which are managed, which you don't have access to. And if you go to the built-in container, which is the one that everyone goes to, the user's container, you can see that there's a domain admins group. And Rob, you've probably done this before, is when you're setting up a domain, one of the first things you do, you add yourself to a domain admins group. Well, in this respect, I've got the box open now, domain admins properties, but the add and remove items are blanked out. Because it's a managed domain, you don't have access to the whole entire domain. You're not a domain admin. What they've done is they've created three OUs under the root structure of the domain, and they've given you access to those. So it's like OU delegation as such.
Okay, so let's take a step back after Mark's had a
elevator pitch. Elevator pitch.
Yeah, it's a bit more than that, I think. I think the thing to start off with is probably the fact for people to appreciate that Azure AD is not a domain controller in the cloud. Azure AD does identity and security, and a domain controller does that, plus it also allows machine joins for Windows 7, Windows 8. Now, one of the commonalities is that Azure AD and on-prem will allow Windows 10 machines to join, but where Azure AD shines is when you need to join devices. So, again, your iOS devices. Now, given that Azure AD doesn't do everything that a domain controller does on-prem, the things it doesn't do are things like Windows 7 and 8 machine joins, Kerberos, LDAP, and things like group policy.
NTLM.
So in this case, what we need then is a service that will do that, that we can add on to our Azure AD, and that service is directory services. So the idea is rather than buying a range of services you may not need, you get Azure AD with Office 365, then you can add in domain services. Now, let me give you a scenario, Mark. So we've got an on-prem domain controller. We've synchronized that using Azure AD Connect to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So now that our users are synchronized, they're the same on-prem as in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the requirement or the request is that we eliminate the need for having an on-prem domain controller.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things we have discussed is obviously putting that domain controller in a virtual machine in Azure, which is relatively easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
But how would we go from moving a domain controller into domain services and then basically eliminating the domain controller so there's no need for that in an on-prem or in a virtual environment?
$1 million question. Okay, all right. Excuse me. So I haven't really actually tested this before. However, you'd still go through step one. And step one would be to what you'd normally do to decommission your on-prem domain controllers, which would be to synchronize all your user accounts up to Azure AD, as you would normally with Azure Connect, AD Connect, or AD Sync, whichever. And then after that, you would once all the user accounts are synced up there, you'd run the PowerShell script to stop the synchronization of the passwords, I think, or what's the step called? I think your passwords are all used up in Azure AD. You reset all the passwords up there, and you decommission your domain controller. So, in other words, in a nutshell, you've got all your accounts up there, and you're using Azure AD as the source.
But hang on a sec here. What about our Windows 7 and 8 machines? We can't just decommission the...
I'm getting to that.
All right.
The confusing... Well, I guess to save the confusion, domain services, which is a managed AD in Azure on your VNet, is completely different to your full-blown Active Directory domain on-prem. Okay, so that's... Just want to clear that out first. Now, here's the thing. Rob's point, what happens to your Windows 7 machines, which are unsupported, but anyway, and Windows 8 machines, which are on a domain, and there could be Windows 10 machines as well on a Active Directory domain as well on-prem. Okay, what happens to those machines? So, here's the thing. You're going to have to remove them from that domain and add them to another domain. And this is a bit which I haven't tested before. Now, think about this, right? Domain services, all it is a domain, managed domain in Azure on a VNet. Now, there's nothing stopping you, I don't think, by having setting up a gateway on the VNet and having either an express route connection to on-prem or a VNet or a site-to-site VPN to on-prem as well. And because of your DNS servers that are published up in your VNet, you've got routes between on-prem and your VNet and also to your DNS servers, which is part of your domain services. And so there's possibly nothing stopping you by changing DNS servers for your computers on-prem and pointing to your managed domain services DNS servers and then adding those computers on-prem to the managed domain services domain. I don't think
that'll
be a problem.
Set up a VNet in Azure, do a site-to-site VPN to the local domain controller, set up a basically then add domain services to the VNet, which will then also be on the same network as your on-prem domain controller. Wouldn't the domain services then take information from your local AD because they're now in the same domain?
They're separate forests altogether, and you can't do a trust. Try that, because somebody else had that idea too, and you're thinking probably of a trust. You'd have your two domains, managed domain up in the cloud, and then you got your full domain on-prem. Remember, you got full access to your on-prem one, but you don't have full access to the one in the cloud because it's managed.
No, but why can't you add your domain services to the same domain that's on-prem?
Well, because you mean, okay, so in other words, why can't you add your managed domain services domain to the forest on-prem? You can't, because they're completely separate domain controllers and FISMO roles and forests, two separate forests.
But when you add your domain services in the cloud, why can't you specify the same domain as already being used on-prem, which is now connected via site-to-site VPN?
I see what you're saying. So, for example, if it was like company.local, for example, have the same domain name up in the cloud on your VNet, the managed domain, so company.local. So what you're saying is, so when the computers then on-prem, because they're connected to company.local, then they should just come across normally, but no, because yeah. there's a thing called a GUID, a machine GUID. And so that would be different, because part of the FSMA roles is a SID, one of the roles is a SID, whatever it is. It manages SIDs, the security identifiers for your domain. Every time you add a computer to a domain, the computer gets a security identifier issued to it, part of the domain. And so the next time the computer spins up, even though it's the same internal domain name across the board, the computer is still going to see it as a different domain. And so you're still going to have to remove it from the existing domain and add it to the new one once you change the DNS settings to point to the new one.
So my understanding is domain services spins up to, by default, to domain controllers.
Yep.
Right, as managed by Microsoft.
Yep.
If you basically had a domain controller on-prem mm-hmm. and then you added domain services to the same network, which was in Azure, those domain controllers would take the next logical numbers, which if the on-prem one, let's say, is .4 or something, then we get .5 and .6. Now, when you did that, don't forget, it's not just the machine accounts. What about the group policy that would... is that possible to bring across?
No. Well, this is a thing. You'd have to do like what's called the migration. And so with group policy and stuff, you'd have to either reset that up by manually. You can export or have the two group policy management consoles open, one screen and then the other one on the other screen. So alt source domain and target machine, and just manually copy the settings across. You can export group policy to some sort of a file, but there's not really any easy way, and you can't really do a migration as such, because see, you need full access, and part of the whole step of doing a migration, AD migration, is this thing called trust. And having the two domains trusting each other, then you can't, because to set up a trust, having something trust the managed directory up in the cloud, you need to be like a domain administrator to set the trust up, right? Or a forest enterprise administrator, either or. And because it's managed, you don't have that access to it, so you can't do trusts, and which means you can't do migrations, and so everything is sort of manual.
So basically what you're saying is you would have to, if you use domain services, you basically need to scrub it and start again.
Well, yeah, but look, it is a use case. It's there, it is handy, it does have the usage where you can set up, like I had a few people who were saying, hey Mark, we want to set up like terminal services if possible. And yeah, it does. There's an article which says that domain services, managed domain services in Azure, in the VNet, does allow you to spin up, say, a terminal services environment, because there's certain applications out there, like terminal services, one of them, that requires a domain, for example.
Not anymore, but yeah, that's true. The older ones do.
There's another one I ran into just recently where, here we go, Azure Backup Server. Azure Backup Server, if you want to spin up that, right, and just like on one server, if you don't have like a full domain, if you want to back up all your workloads and things and make have the value of what that provides, you can't just set up Azure Backup Server on just a normal server, like a workgroup server. It won't allow you, because your server needs to be joined to a domain. And so if you're in that situation, well, you can spin up directory services and set up a server and attach it to the domain and have Azure Backup Server running and have that talking to your machines to back them up.
Yeah, I think that, it gives you that flexibility, but again, what we're talking about generally is that you're probably going to have to start clean, so that means you'll have to run it up as a separate entity, as Mark's indicated, but the other thing to appreciate is it doesn't give you that same functionality. So as you've indicated, you don't get that access, but also the group policy items within domain services are limited. So they're not as fully featured as what you find on-prem. So if you have very, very complex group policy,
it's the same.
Domain services may not work for you.
It's the same group policy management console, exactly the same. You can still add...
No, the console's the same. However, the functionality within group policy is not the same
as on-prem. It's different to the amount of... what's the extensions you add to group policy again? So if you want to like...
ADX or whatever, I think.
Yeah, ADM files. I haven't tested, but I think you possibly might be limited by which ADM files you can add in.
But also I think the inbuilt one doesn't give you the same features as the ones you find in a domain controller. So at the end of the day, you would consider this really as a legacy tool. This would really be a tool to maintain some old legacy Windows 7, Windows 8 machines or something that you are looking to eventually migrate away from. So again, it's going to have a limited feature set. It's going to give you some functionality in the interim, but in the long run, it's probably not something you're going to maintain for a long period of time, I would suggest. It is there. You can add it into your Azure environment. And again, the good thing is, I understand it, is that it's only billed by transaction. So it's not billed by time. So if you run up a domain controller as a VM, you'd be billed for obviously time that it's spinning, whereas domain services are basically billed by transaction. So it's much more cost effective in that respect.
Okay, so just to clarify that, what Rob was saying about group policy, you've got the full kit and caboodle with group policy management. However, when I expand out group policy management console, you've got, you might remember, default domain policy right at the top level, which is attached to your domain, right? And that's the default one. So if you right click and I go to edit, edit is grayed out because obviously it's the default domain policy. Access to that is only by domain admins. However, if you go through to the OUs as to where you've got access to, in there you can, I can right click and go create a GPO in this domain and link it here. It allows me to do that. I can then create like a blank GPO, attach it to that OU, which I've got full access to. And then in that GPO, I can then make changes to it and edit settings exactly the same as on-prem. So there's that.
Yeah, my understanding is there are some limits.
No. Everything's there. So computer configuration, user configuration, preferences.
Yeah, but even inside that, I think there are some limits. Just be careful is what we're saying.
I'm just expanding it out now, and everything seems to be all exactly the same as what you'd used to be. But it's all the default stuff for Windows Server. But as I said, the ADM files, which you can add in, I haven't added those in, so I can't really sort of comment on that. But other than that, like the general settings that you'd be used to, which is the, say, Windows components, so control panel, personalization. So, for example, prevent, enable, locking screen camera, prevent changing lock screen, login image, user accounts, apply the default account picture to all users. There's one for printers, for example. So all of that sort of stuff is the same. But it's just you can't apply group policy to or edit the default domain policy for obvious reasons because you don't have access at that level, at a domain admin level.
Yes, but again, just be aware that there are some limits. It's not as full-featured, and again, it's designed as a legacy tool to help you obviously migrate to the full direct Azure AD. So the way to look at it is, if you're not looking to do domain services, the way that you basically would need to go is, if you have Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise machines, they can directly join to Azure AD. So therefore, that gets over the fact of doing machine joins to the domain. And the way that you manage those Windows 10 machines is now using something like Mobile Device Management, MDM, or Intune.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing too is, if you've got servers and things, the new age way of doing it for those servers is desired state configuration. Whether you use native PowerShell desired state configuration, or what some customers are talking about is maybe Puppet or Chef. I mean, like either or, like, hey, you can bring it to Azure and we offer support for all of those, whether it's Puppet, native PowerShell desired state configuration, or Chef. I mean, me personally, I would just stick with desired state configuration and use Azure Automation as your pull server, because you can set that up as a secure pull server. You don't have to worry about setting that up, and it can store all your MOFs, and all your servers are then easily treated like cattle rather than pets.
So I think the message here is that going forward, that things like domain services, things like group policy are in a way being deprecated. They'll be around for a long time, obviously, but there is a modern way of looking at it, and that's typically with Windows 10 directly joined to Azure AD, then using mobile device management for your workstations and DSC, desired state configuration, for your server. So if you're in the game, if you're an IT pro, then you're probably going to need to look at those new technologies and skill up on those, because they are becoming the preferred way to manage your environment.
So there's a couple of things there. So Rob's right. So clients, I'd stick with EMS and the whole domain join, all that sort of stuff with your client machines and your devices. That's perfectly accurate in saying that. Now your servers, there's a couple of words for this. There's infrastructure as code, which is basically coding your infrastructures to what it looks like in code. So, for example, your JSON template. So, this is how my infrastructure looks like. I've got these VNets, for example, these storage accounts and stuff. And then you've got another term called configuration as code. And that then goes down one step further from your infrastructure, and that goes down to your server, the configuration of it. And so, that's where desired state configuration comes in. Now, if you want to jump into this, there is an awesome desired state configuration video series online, part of the Virtual Academy, Microsoft Virtual Academy. Jeffrey Snover and what's the other guy's name? I think it's Jason someone. It is only recent they did this. There's a 7-part series to desired state configuration. It's a fantastic video series. And if there's one person that's the best at explaining desired state configuration, it's none other than the father and the daddy of PowerShell, the guy that invented it. It's Jeffrey Snover. So definitely check that out.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we're getting towards time, Mark. We probably need to wrap this one up. Again, if people have questions or want us to go further in detail, then what's the best way for them to get in contact with us?
Well, Rob, it's easy. We've got three ways to contact us. On Twitter, we've got at N2K Podcast. We've also got, I'll let you do the Facebook in a sec.
it's all the same. Why don't you just keep doing it? Get it over and done with.
All right. Don't bite you. Well, Facebook and Twitter is both N2K Podcast. And then we've got email, which is feedback@needtoknow.cloud. We've also got a website, which is podcasts.needtoknow.cloud. And also, too, to contact me direct, Twitter is probably the best option for that one. It's at Mark Keen, which is MarkKean. And Rob, what about yourself?
Twitter is the best for me, at Director CIA. And again, all those other means will get through to me as well. We'll make sure that we post that information and try and answer those questions. But I think for today, that's probably enough information for everybody to try and digest. A lot of complexity. The good thing is, if you have a tenant, you can go in and spin up that domain services and have a play with it yourself, get some idea. But remember, again, the way that domains sort of work in the Azure world is they've split off the security and the user management from the device management, the group policy, machine join sort of stuff. That stuff is in domain services now. Less and less focus on that as we move to Windows 10 direct join and also mobile device management, but it's still there. And if you have any questions, please hit us up. But I think with that, we're pretty much done for this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.